My guest follows in the footsteps of Frank Sinatra, Mel Torme and Tony Bennett as one of the great song interpreters. He's been described as the finest male jazz singer Australia's produced since Vince Jones. And over the course of a long career in Australia and in America, he's honed his talents and worked with the iconic musicians such as Australia's own Tommy Tico, Tom Rainier, the pianist for Tony Bennett, Bob Rosario, the pianist and arranger for Bobby Darin, Vincent Falcone, the pianist and conductor for Frank Sinatra, and the brush master Clayton Cameron, the drummer for Tony Bennett and Sammy Davis Jr. He's also a ridiculously talented visual artist, and he's about to wrap up a nationwide tour with the John Morrison Big Band at the State Theatre here in Sydney on Thursday, the 25th of August, with special guest James Morrison. Greg Arthur, welcome to Now's the Time.
Frank, what an intro.
We had to make time for you to have a chat as well. Greg.
No, read the whole thing again. It was really good. I loved it.
Look, before we get to have a chat about the State Theatre performance in particular, take us back, if you would. I'd like to learn a little bit about how you discovered music and who were your early influences, and perhaps that moment, that special moment when you realised that singing was going to be your chosen path.
Wow. Okay, that's a long while ago. My father had a wonderful record collection, Miles Davis, Stan Getz. Ironically, he also had very commercial stuff like Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, which is, yeah, it was, but, you know, he had Sarah Vaughan and Carmen McRae, beautiful albums. And when we would go up to his cattle property, which was on the McIntyre River up near Warrialda, past Inverell, that's all I would listen to as a kid. I just loved it. I used to love Ella and Louie, those two albums that they did together. Just beautiful music, great standards, and listening to them work together was that's an education unto itself. Louis Armstrong, I mean, perfect phrasing, great musician. Later on, I was just singing so much that it was inevitable, I guess. But when I lived in the United States, I ended up getting a residency working for Herb Alpert in his Club Vibrato, which is in Bel Air. And my dad would have absolutely loved that. He would have thought that was fantastic.
Well, I suppose up at Warrialda, he would have been able to turn up the music as loud as you liked.
Oh, yeah. He had huge speakers, and coming out of the sheep shed, we didn't have sheep, we had cattle, but the sheep shed had been there from a century before the previous owners, I think. And he had a big valve amplifier, and he used to really belt out lots of Duke Ellington and Count Basie. You could hear it from miles away. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Well, he had some impeccable taste by the sounds of it.
He did. Oh, absolutely. I've still got a lot of them, Frank. I still listen to them, look after them very carefully. I love vinyl.
Oh, good on you. Yeah, we love it here. Yeah. Now's the Time as well. We have one every week at about 33 and a third minutes past eight. But you've performed all over the world and spent a number of years in the US with some of the best in the business, which we mentioned, but including Sinatra's pianist in his latter days, Vincent Falcone. What are some of the real standout moments for you during that time in the US?
How long is your show? There's a ton of them. Obviously, having Vinnie Falcone say to me one night, I'm not going to be able to do the gig on Friday. And I'm like, why not? This was Wednesday. He said, oh, I've just been hired by Tony Bennett to go on tour. And I said, well, that's a good excuse. So he took me, I ended up taking the night off. That was at Harrah's Casino in Las Vegas. And I ended up taking the night off, and they put something else on that night. And I went to the Hilton Resort and Casino in Las Vegas and watched Harold Jones and Vinnie Falcone and the rest of the quartet play a brilliant concert with Tony Bennett. It was really wonderful. And Vinnie gave Mr. Bennett my recordings, and introduced us, and that's a standout. I did a painting of Mr. Bennett. I love to paint, as you mentioned earlier in that fantastic introduction. I want a copy of that, by the way. I did some sketches and ended up doing an oil painting of Mr. Bennett, which he has. I don't know where it might be, in the downstairs bathroom for all I know, but he's got it. And it eventuated in him being so impressed with my originality and my phrasing and everything that he wrote me a handwritten letter, and that opened a lot of doors for me in the US. That was about 2006, and later on, when I decided to live over there, because I was sick of going back and forth, I did that for a very long time, where I'd go over and do 3 or 4 month contracts, you know, and I ended up deciding to live there, which I did for a few years, but that letter from it's like having a letter from the Pope, you know.
It
opens doors, and that's what got me an audition with the club up at Vibrato, and then started to work with Tom Rainier, who by then was also working with Tony Bennett. And, of course, Clayton Cameron was in the trio at that club. And he had toured with Mr. Bennett and Sammy Davis and all sorts of people. He's on the he's on that comeback special, the MTV Live with Ralph Sharon trio.
Oh,
That's Clayton Cameron on drums for that.
Right.
You ever watched the video of that fantastic performance? Yeah, he's a lovely guy to work with. It's that club was full of moments. You're asking about highlights. Mm. The people that came to Herb Alpert's club that had permanent tables there, directors and producers and singers. And Tom Jones was always in there, Sir Tom Jones. And he was a lovely guy, very down-to-earth person to meet and chat to. And countless people that would come through and sit and listen to songs. Alan and Marilyn Bergman were in there one night, and that scared the hell out of me.
Did you ask them to write a song for you?
No, I didn't get to meet them, but they were there, and they had dinner and listened to the show, and I didn't get to meet them.
I don't
do that. It's an Australian thing, isn't it? You don't rush up to people and say, "Hi, can I have your autograph?" It's you just sort of let them be and have their meal. That's my attitude anyway.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. There's a lot to that. I know myself, when I've had opportunities overseas to sort of just be in someone's face, and you just tend to think twice and then wonder what might have happened if you did. But I was going to say, much has been said about your phrasing, you know, phrasing a lyric. And I was going to ask you, what are the key elements to achieve impeccable phrasing?
For a singer, for me, you can only talk from your own perspective, can't you? I mean, I'm not a teacher. I never have been. But it's by not listening to singers. It's listening to great instrumentalists and how they approach a song, from Stan Getz to Ornette Coleman to Miles. I love early Miles Davis stuff when he was working with Red Garland and people like that, and doing ballads like old folks. And
that mid-1950s stuff.
That's right, yeah. I Thought About You. Listening to Miles Davis play I Thought About You, is that's all you need to know about how to phrase that song. And then go away and work out what the lyrics are about, because they're beautiful poetry, all of the Great American Songbook. Work out what the lyrics are about and what they mean to you as a poem, and then apply that phrasing so that you're expressing yourself naturally, not trying to prove something. The biggest thing I had to hold on to in the United States was not losing my Australian accent. I was determined not to, and that ended up making me kind of unique, which was nice.
Now, as I mentioned at the top, you're an extremely talented visual artist in mediums such as oil and charcoal. You can see portraits of Robin Williams and Sinatra and even Turner-esque landscapes, all available for viewing on your website. If you weren't a singer...
Thank you so much.
If you weren't a singer, what profession do you think you would be?
Definitely a painter. Mm. Yeah, I love to paint. Turner-esque landscapes, wow. I want that in writing too. the idea of putting. I sold a lot of work in the US. I've never have in Australia. At most in Australia, they're Christmas presents for somebody.
Is that right? So, why do you think that is?
I have no idea. I don't know what the. I don't understand how the system works here. I guess it's more cliquey, sort of political or something. You've got to be in the right group, the right place at the right time. I have no idea, Frank. I don't know how it works. But in the US, it was a case of, what did I do? I did some caricatures one night. I was watching Jeff Goldblum do a gig playing piano, and I did a caricature of him while I was sitting at the table of him playing piano and a dinosaur about to bite his head off. And a waiter walked past and laughed out loud like crazy, and then the guy at the next table wanted to buy it off me, and a little bidding war went on.
Wow.
And I ended up giving it to Jeff Goldblum, and he held it up and said, "See how rude Australians can be." I did a caricature of Jerry Seinfeld, and so many people. If ever I saw somebody, I'd do a drawing of them, and became really good friends with Brad Garrett, who has his own comedy club at the MGM Grand. So if you ever go there, you'll see a lot of my artwork on the wall, actually, paintings and portraits that he asked me to do. And when his really good friend Robin died, he wanted two different portraits. One was of Robin Williams, the famous funny man. Mm. And that was for his club to hang on the wall, like a full-on oil painting portrait. And the other one was for his home in Malibu. And Brad wanted that for the front entrance, the lobby coming into the house. And that was the Robin that he knew, that he was dear friends with.
And did you study art at all, or was this just a natural talent?
I studied in high school at a good Australian public school education. I had great art teachers, and I studied a bit after that at various places, but didn't like the way they were formulating how you had to approach a painting, especially with portraiture. I start a portrait by looking at somebody and saying, "Oh, you've got interesting ears." So I start with the ears and work my way from there, and it always seems to work out. It's always in the middle of the canvas.
Well, that's where you need to be.
Yes,
I guess with a portrait.
Yes.
Now, I think you've just returned back from Darwin, if I'm not mistaken. How has the celebration of Swing Tour been received to date?
The end of January. We started in Ayr and Cairns, worked our way all the way down through Queensland and New South Wales, and it's been fantastic. Adelaide, Perth, we went to Albany. It's just been wonderful traveling around with all these people on a bus and all these musicians, brilliant musicians, all the best guys in the country have traveled around. Hammer Hall was brilliant. Her Majesty's in Adelaide, that was a fantastic concert. QPAC in Brisbane. We've had a lot of really big highlights of very full theatres. You're talking 1,600, 1,700-seat theatres, and it's been a real joy performing classic big band hits. Great Duke Ellington. The show starts with Glenn Miller, and John Morrison talks about how he was influenced as a drummer in his life of music, and with his brother James, you know, and it's prolific stuff and great stories, and they just go right through to all the Count Basie stuff, and then I get to sing a couple of Sinatra songs. You can't do a big band celebration without doing some Frank.
That's right.
And, yeah, I mean, just the most brilliant singer of big band music, I think. And then later on I talk about Tony Bennett with Duke Ellington. And, you know, Jackie Cooper's in the show as well, and she sings some Peggy Lee and some Ella Fitzgerald. It's really quite wonderful.
We have a Sinatra segment at 8 p.m. every Tuesday night on the program. Can I ask you what your go-to Sinatra album is so we can lock in a track from that album next week on the program?
Absolutely. This is a hard question.
It is a hard question because there's so many great albums. That's right.
The songs for only the Lonely.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which is all ballad. When I want rain, I get stormy weather. You can't hear a better version of these hugely beautiful arrangements. I think it's Nelson Riddle. I also love Francis Albert Sinatra and Antonio Carlos Jobim, the Klaus Ogerman arrangements of all of the Brazilian tunes. That's a stunning album. I think Frank is at his absolute peak there with subtlety, which you don't get so much with Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
There's so many different colors and shades to Sinatra. I sing this in the show. I sing his first hit with the Harry James Orchestra, which is All or Nothing at All, and an incredibly hard song, and you don't hear it because it's just so damn hard to sing. And so I talk about that in the show, A Celebration of Swing. And but I guess Sinatra at the Sands is the epitome of his humor, his outright swing, great phrasing, Count Basie Orchestra. I don't think you can beat that.
Yeah, with Quincy Jones conducting, that's right.
That's right, yeah.
Greg Arthur, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program.
It's really good to talk to you, Frank. Thank you.